cap verse. That's cool right there.
Ain't that much going on with me, man. Trying to hold it in the road.
Wake up in the morning, roll a blunt, and then I count faint. Pull out the garage, hit a button, then the top faint. You ain't from the A, all you really did was migrate. Asking me if I'm great. Yeah, bitch, I'm great. Swerving down Peace Street. Yeah, bitch.
What's up, guys? Welcome to show number 84. As always, I want to thank you guys so much for rocking me these first 83 shows. By now, you know where to find me. If you go to SoundCloud, Stitcher, as well as iTunes, search for Trill Withers, the show will come up. Do me a favor, go ahead and subscribe there so that the show will come to you every week. Got the email address, that's trillwitherspodcast@gmail.com, and the website is lookingupfromthefloor.wordpress.com. All right, first things first, I got to give my thoughts on the Victor Oladipo, Serge Ibaka trade that happened draft night, close to a week ago, but it's still on my mind. And I got to say, I like the trade. I really like the trade. I liked Oladipo. I wish him well. Having said that, Kerry Champion, I think that his skill set is being overrated by the masses. And the masses are individuals that have never watched the Orlando Magic play basketball. I've often said that. So I just feel like for the people that have watched Victor Oladipo, he's a solid player. He's a nice enough player, but I think he's better on offense than defense, which is kind of backwards to his rep that he is a lockdown defender, which he is not. And I hear this talk of he and Russell Westbrook being a lockdown backcourt, and that tells me that you've watched neither Victor Oladipo nor Russell Westbrook play defense over the last couple of seasons. And that's fine, too. It doesn't mean that he can't be good there. Like, I definitely think he'll help. I think Oklahoma City wins here, too. Like, they get a guy that can create some off the dribble. I think Oladipo and Roberson, it's a decent combo. I don't know what happens to Deion Waiters. He'll probably get the max somewhere. But for Oladipo, like, I feel like there's a reason he was available. Like, there's a reason they drafted Mario Hezonja, who's pretty much going to be his replacement, top five last year. So, like, when you hear people talking about Orlando, it's always they have a bunch of guys and no star. Well, Oladipo is one of those guys. So whatever you thought of his potential, you know, he wasn't going to hit it playing next to Elfrid Payton, and he wasn't going to hit it splitting minutes with Evan Fournier or Mario Hezonja. Now, for the trade itself, it was Oladipo. Ilyasova, he's really a non-factor. Like, I imagine they'll keep him just because he's big, they can shoot, and they've already got him. But he might help him off the bench. He might be a spot starter. They might cut him all together. I don't know. He's really a non-factor. And Sabonis. Sabonis is the one I was surprised to see people, like, killing Orlando for trading Sabonis. Now, Sabonis, I liked as a prospect, not necessarily for this team, but I liked him as a prospect. But you can't keep telling me how weak this draft is. Like, I can't be told that it's a two-player draft. Neither of these guys are surefire stars. And then saying that the 11th pick in the draft is going to be a factor. Like, I would have traded the 11th pick for Nerlens or any kind of rim protector. So Sabonis, again, I think he'll be fine. Definitely in Oklahoma City, I think he'll be a nice player, but he doesn't really move the meter for me. Like, I don't feel like I'm going to rue the day we traded away Sabonis. Now, for Ibaka himself, one thing is funny to me. It's just funny how, like, for years, for the last, what, 3, maybe 4 years, we kept hearing how choosing Ibaka over Harden was definitely the right choice. Like, no doubt. You can find another Harden before you can find another Ibaka. And now Oladipo over Ibaka is declared, like, an easy victory for Oklahoma City. And I understand it was, like, you know, Ibaka at 22 instead of 26 or whatever he is now. But look, man, I just found out Serge Ibaka's got, like, a 13-year-old daughter. Like, 12 or 13-year-old daughter. So if this nigga's really, like, 36, all bets are off, and I fucking hate this deal. But I'm going to operate on the assumption that he is 26. I think he's 26. Like, I feel like Nicholas Batum was traded in a similar deal last year. Like, a team acquired a veteran for a young prospect, and it was like, what was the point? And then Batum had a great year. Had a very great year. He's going to make a lot of money this summer, but I can't imagine why the Hornets wouldn't be the ones offering him that money. Now, if he leaves, you know, it sucks for them. They still got a great year, and he did anything more than Noah Vonleh did in Portland. So, like, we keep hearing about how hard it is to acquire a big that can, one, protect the rim and stretch the floor. Orlando acquired a 26-year-old one, and it's a bad idea. Like, I know his last season wasn't his best. I think he had a career low in numbers. I get that. I understand. But you understand that Kerry Hilson left this man, or they broke up for whatever reason. They broke up. Like, if you've seen Kerry Hilson, I'd be sad all year too. So I can't really hold that against him. I can't really hold that against him at all. And they said he wasn't happy with the way he's being used. So now he's in Orlando. He's in a new environment, a weaker conference, and he's playing for a max deal. And a max deal, especially with the cap jump, could be a big, big raise for him. So I think we're going to get a good version of Serge Ibaka. Now, as far as the Thunder, you know, I'm guessing they're going with just Adams and Cantor as the front court of their future, you know, because they look great in the Spurs series. But again, during the Golden State series, Cantor really got played off the court. So that's putting a whole lot of faith in Steven Adams. Steven Adams has never played more than 25 minutes a game in a season. And Oklahoma City was also like this close to the finals. So they're making like a major change when they were very close to the finals. So of all the things Oklahoma City did well defensively, as far as, you know, giving Golden State trouble, Ibaka was a part of that. That he was out there switching on the guards and moving his feet and, you know, contesting shots with his wingspan, you know, even if it didn't show up in the blocks numbers. So now you're trusting that to Cantor, who's not nearly the athlete, and Sabonis, again, not nearly the athlete, you know, or defender that Ibaka is. So I feel like that's a big change, a much bigger risk for Oklahoma City. Now, if they play Durant at four more, that could definitely make this interesting, but I don't know. With Cantor, I feel like he's going to definitely have to get his minutes, so I don't know where they go there. Back to Orlando, I think as far as Vucevic, he can go, honestly. Like, he could be traded today, and I'd be fine. But I do think you're going to get more of him, you know, more out of him with Ibaka next to him, like a legit rim protector. I think you're going to get more out of Elfrid Payton, you know, from spacing. You know, Ibaka is a shooter. It'll be more minutes for Mario Hezonja, Evan Fournier, who are better shooters than Victor Oladipo was. I think you can drop in Ibaka Gordon front court. That will be fun from time to time. Now, you're probably going to have to match whatever Evan Fournier gets, you know, but it's a max on a lower salary cap. Defensive coach like Frank Vogel, you know, you got to hope he can, you know, make him a decent defender. And like another thing I saw, I'd seen that Cantor, Enes Kanter's deal last summer was 4 years of $70 million. And that same deal now would be 4 years, $95 million with the cap jump. So that's from last year to this year. We keep hearing it's another big jump. So I don't know what the max is going to, for a restricted free agent, is going to look like next summer. And so you're looking at Oklahoma City is going to be paying like $25 million per for Oladipo. Now, Ibaka, he'll be unrestricted. I think he'll probably be looking at 30. So you're either paying, you know, close to $25 million for the guard that couldn't stand out in a group of other unremarkable guards, or you're paying $30 million for a guy who is one year removed from hitting nearly 40% of his three-pointers and blocking close to three shots a game. So for a team like Orlando, kind of stuck in the mud, needing to make a real playoff push, I don't mind the deal. In fact, I like it. I think both sides will benefit from it, but I like the deal. All right, next thing I wanted to touch on briefly before I get into some questions, I have some questions kind of piling up. I don't think Golden State lost because they chased 73 wins. Like, I keep hearing that. I feel like they lost because Draymond Green couldn't keep his cool, couldn't stop punching dicks. Like, man dicks. If he stopped punching man dicks, then I feel like Golden State would have won this title, period. And if he plays game five, I just find it hard to believe that they lose three straight like that. But on the low, I kind of think this might be good for Golden State. Like, if they won it all, again, you're looking at back-to-back champs. And with that, they'll compete next summer. And I think you would find yourself overpaying to keep a great core, but an aging one. Like, some of those guys have become free agents next year. Livingston, Bogut, Iguodala, maybe Barbosa, too. It's a good core now. A couple years, maybe not so much. So I think as of now, you get one last go with everybody. Everybody's motivated to see if you can get one more ring. And then you just let the cap space for Kevin Durant open itself up. You just let it open itself up. And there was a graphic that said, you know, if he does the one-year deal with the option, as he should and will, he could get $193 million over the next 5 years from another team. So he could take his money one last year in Oklahoma City, go to Golden State, come out with $193 million over 5 years. Or if he stays in Oklahoma City for the next 6 years, you know, the 1 year deal plus a 5 year extension because they can offer him another year, he'd get $252 million. That's a difference of $59 million. So I am not Kevin Durant. If I was, I would just have to live in farm town, Oklahoma City for the rest of my fucking life. That's just how it's going to be. $59 million. Having a ring would be great. You know, go down in history. You know, spray champagne on your teammates and all that. I'd rather have $59 million. I read that $59 million. And the beauty of it is that it's not, you know, one is not ruling out the other. Oklahoma City was very close to the finals. You know, if that Oladipo trade works out well, they could be right back in the finals with a shot to win it. So he might get both. But, yeah, 252 over 6 years, that's like, that's baseball money. Now, not like good baseball player money. It's like shortstop for the Milwaukee Brewers type money, because everybody gets paid in baseball. But still, that ain't bad. That ain't bad. So I'm definitely interested to see what happens there. If I was Kevin Durant, I would take meetings with everybody and get everybody's free meal and try to figure out what kind of intel I could get, and then go back right back and sign that 1 year deal with the 1 year option. So I'm interested to see what happens with that. All right, first question. As always, thank you guys for the questions. Question is, I had a great weekend with this lady friend. She's so awesome. I don't want to be in love with her because she's a flight attendant and lives back in my homeland. I think I want to be in love again, but at the same time, I think it won't end the way that I want it to end. Please help. Thanks. To that, I would say you don't really get to make that call. You're too deep in. You don't really get to make that call, because the fact that you're even asking means that it's like you're already on the roller coaster. Like, it's out of your hands. You can either like hold on or let your let your arms go or hold on tight. But either way, you're already on the roller coaster. It's taken off and it's no longer in your hands. So I would say don't miss your blessing with those flight benefits. If even temporarily, do not miss your blessing with those flight benefits. And I feel like if you know the way that you want it to end. Now, you say you don't think it'll end the way you want it to end. If you know, if you have in your mind the way you want it to end, be honest with her about that. She might want that too. You know, and if she wants that, you know, it's two people working toward that goal instead of one person feeling like they're working towards it. And if she doesn't, you can already start, you know, bracing yourself for the sweet, sweet touch of heartbreak. So I would say just be honest with her. Like, again, the roller coaster's already started. So you might as well just go with it. Try to love her and just go from there. All right, the next question is, another topic is a bit old, but I recently got a you up text that I missed by 30 to 45 minutes because my phone was dead. As you can assume, when I responded, I got no reply back. That brings me to my question. Is it worse to miss the you up text by half an hour because your phone was dead or in another room? Or is it worse to wake up the next morning and see that you've missed the text? I would say it's worse to miss it by 30 minutes, like miss it by a short amount of time, and or your phone be in the next room, because that's like losing a close ball game to me. Like, if I lose a game, I want it to be a blowout. Like just talking about the Warriors, if it's game seven, I'd rather lose game seven by 55 points than have Kyrie Irving hit that, you know, that dagger three-pointer right in Steph's face. Like, the phone in the next room, that's a lucky shot or a bad call by the referees. That you sleeping through the text, that's you losing by 44. Like, a loss is a loss, but I can cope with one better. So I would definitely say I'd much rather just sleep all the way through it and just respond to it like 11 hours later. You know, you just offer to pay to eat it and, you know, hope that Hail Mary goes in and go from there. All right, next question is, I'm wondering if the most legally disrespectful thing you can do on defense is pinning someone's shot against the backboard. I would say yes. I would say yes, no question. Like, the any kind of pin at all, but the two-hand pin. Like, if you remember Michael Jordan, when Michael Jordan was with the Wizards, he had a two-hand pin where he pinned Ron Mercer's shit against the glass with both hands. And that is some of the most disrespectful shit I've ever seen, like, for a number of reasons. Number one, Jordan was like 51. He was old as fuck at the time. That's number one. Number two, it was against the Bulls. Like, just the symbolism of him doing against the Bulls. Like, I still got something left or whatever. And number three, and this is the most important one, Ron Mercer at that time was like a god to me. Like, all those guys from like the 96 and 98 Kentucky National Championship teams, because I went to a school in a fucking horrible neighborhood, as they're, you know, giving back to the community, all those guys used to come to my school. Like, Ron Mercer, Antoine Walker, Nazi Muhammad, all those guys used to come to our school and play basketball with us. So Ron Mercer was like a god to me. This thing was like Jesus Christ. And to see that happen to him in that fashion, I don't think I've looked up to anybody since, to be completely honest. So I would say, yes, that is the most disrespectful thing you can do legally to another human being. Next question is, you're offered $1 million to be locked in a gym with Harrison Barnes. You can't leave until he hits an open jump shot. Do you take the deal? Yeah, I mean, of course you take the deal. Like, I got 2 years to spare. Like, what what am I going to do for the next 2 years that would give me $1 million? So I would definitely take that risk. But, like, Jesus Christ, that nigga was terrible in the finals. Like, he averaged, I had to look it up to make sure he's as bad as I remembered him being. He averaged 9 points a game on 35% shooting. And if you'll recall, a lot of those shots were wide open, and he was just fucking up everything. This is the equivalent of him being about to graduate college and get a job with, like, Google or something, like some great company. And then he gets like a 14 on his last final in his capstone class, and it just fucks everything up. So this Olympic run is a godsend for him, and I respect the finesse, but I fucking hate it because it means we got to watch more Harrison Barnes, because, like, he's not going to get the other team's best defender. It's a shorter three-point line, and he's going to play himself right back into the max. Like, he's going to give Czechoslovakia like 28 in the gold medal game and get all that money back. So let me say, I'm not really that excited about the Olympics at all. And not with this team they've given us. Mm-mm. Like, Barnes, Kyle Lowry is there, DeMar DeRozan's there. And once they announced Barnes, I was like, I'm slick rooting against this. I'm slick rooting against this. I kind of hope we lose for this shit show we're sending on the road. Like, let me watch a couple of the early round games. Let me see somebody like Congo or Nigeria just have a team that's just fun as hell to watch, and I'm all in on rooting for another team, because I really do think that I'm at a point, I feel like the Olympics should be like 22 and under, or you could say 24, you know, if you want to say guys can have a 2-run Olympic max and then they're out. Carmelo Anthony's like 45 years old. Carmelo Anthony, he's going to play ball until his son is playing Olympic ball with him, because it's really all he's got. There's no reason for a 62-year-old Carmelo Anthony to be playing Olympic basketball anymore. And I feel like if you go 22 and under, like just right now, we could send this team overseas. You could go Ben Simmons, Brandon Ingram, Chris Dunn, Karl Anthony Towns, D'Angelo Russell, Justice Winslow, Devin Booker, Jabari Parker, Aaron Gordon. Like, there, I feel like you could put a damn good team together, and all those guys are 22 and under. Like, I'm not trying to watch no 32-year-old Kyle Lowry pass the ball to a 64-year-old Carmelo Anthony. I'm just not really trying to see that. I'd much rather see those younger guys, see them grow and progress and still see them dominate Lithuania. So I'm not really that hype about the Olympics, and I blame Harrison Barnes for that. All right, next question is what LeBron did in these finals carry a Cleveland team back from 3 games down against a 73-win team, winning 2 in arena that saw 2 away wins all year, leading both teams in every statistical category? Is that the greatest individual sports performance of all time? I'm trying to think, and I can't come up with anyone who had to endure as much pressure as he did and responded by dominating so much against an incredible opponent. I would say it's up there for sure. Like, it's got to be up there. And, like, on the court itself was phenomenal. Probably the best, like, again, for all the things just listed, probably the best finals performance I've seen. Like, just from seeing him, like, in the early game, still do the numbers. He was still putting up numbers, but the impact wasn't really there. You know, if you're watching the games, that outside shot wasn't really falling at first. He wasn't getting to the line very much in the first, I think, 2, maybe 3 games. Yeah, they went down, yeah, first 3 games, I would say. And then he kind of just figured it out. Like, he turned it on. Once game 5 happened, Draymond was out. He had the 41-16-7, and that was it. That was that. I said it at the time, you know, I said, I'm not going to bet against LeBron. I had people tell me that because, you know, Draymond was out, but Iggy wasn't. And Iggy was going to lock LeBron up and all that. And I'm not going to bet against LeBron James until he proves that I shouldn't. And another thing I was surprised about with that, right after the finals, I think it was the same night, I asked people where they had LeBron ranked all time in the, you know, super hyperbole edition. And the options were either first, second through 5, or 6 through 10. And 28% said number 1 all time. 60% said top 5. And I was very surprised by that. Pleasantly surprised, I should say. Because even in the moment, I didn't know if people would see him as that high. And before this finals, I said, you could probably argue 5 people have had better careers than LeBron. But you can't convince me that it's been 5 better basketball players on this planet than LeBron James ever. And this just strengthened that. Like, if he's not number 1, I feel like he's getting close. You know, I don't think he'll have a better career than Jordan, rings-wise, or Kareem. But if you're drafting a team and you've got the number one pick, I think LeBron James definitely has his argument over anybody. Like, over anybody. And, like, he just showed he's still got it. He's got three rings. If he could get, I don't know, if he got two more, if he finished with five rings, or even four, like, again, he's already top five to me. We'll make him number one. I don't know, maybe two more rings. And, you know, just epic performances that, you know, that go along with that. And I might put him at the GOAT. But as for now, he is the best player of this generation, for sure. And I think he's a top five player all time. All right, next question is, I recently got caught up in a quote-unquote relationship that I shouldn't have allowed myself to get into. Now this girl wants nothing to do with me in that regard, but seems adamant on remaining friends. This has led to an almost complete loss of confidence in myself. Any advice for a 20-year-old like me? First, I would say you shouldn't be in any relationship you're not comfortable with. Like, not boyfriend, not girlfriend, not fuck buddies, not friends, nothing. You know, if she wants to be friends and you don't, then dead it. Just go ahead and kill that. Like, it's going to hurt either way. But let it be on terms that you're comfortable with. So if, you know, you have to get her out of your life completely, so be it. And I know that's a lot easier said than done, but it's so much easier than keeping that person in your life, you know, for something they want. Meanwhile, you're miserable. And I would say, man, at 20 years old, I was with the woman that I thought I was going to spend the rest of my life with. And now we don't even speak anymore. So I say that to say this. Understand that it's a marathon and not a sprint. That's something I have to remind myself even now. You know what I'm saying? So at 20, man, 20 years old, it's a marathon, not a sprint. And I know that it's tough to see that while you're actually like running the race. But, you know, trust me on this. Like, if you're 20 and, you know, if you're doing anything for you, like you're in school or working, whatever, like 20 is prime age for hoeing, men and women. 20 is prime age for hoeing, and it's the summer. You know what I'm saying? So my advice would be, get her out of your life. You know, if you think this was best for you, you can be sad for a while. It happens. But while you're being sad, like, look around. Just look around. It's summer. You 20, and the ladies out here looking to have some summer fun. So, you know, don't let it hold you back. Learn from it. The one thing I learned from that experience, from not, you know, breaking up with the person I thought I was going to spend the rest of my life with, you're invincible to a certain extent after that. Like, you realize nothing's ever going to hurt that bad again. So this might be your, like, star of invincibility. So if it is, let it be that. If not, still learn from it. At the very worst, it's summer and you should be out here being out here. Right. Next question is, reading Justin Timberlake's first tweet, disregard the OU sweet soul. I didn't understand how anyone could be mad at what he was saying. Just admiring someone being outspoken against racial inequality. Although I'm white and may not understand fully, is there any high profile white person in today's world that can speak out on the injustice without coming across negative and racially biased? Okay, the first thing that question said was disregard the OU sweet soul. But that's the thing. You can't disregard the OU sweet soul. You can't. That's a part of the tweet. That's some of what he's catching criticism for. It was the first thing he said, and it was just very spicy. Very spicy from Timberlake. Unnecessarily sassy. So he really set the tone there with the backlash he was going to receive with that one. And not only was it condescending, but it's something about it just feels like slick racist. Just OU sweet soul just feels slick racist. Like, I remember on Twitter, Dragonfly Jones said you can just hear bloodhounds in the background. And that's funny as hell. Like, that's how, like, a white man from Memphis telling somebody black, OU sweet soul. That's how it comes off. And it's not about him being white. Like, it's not about Justin Timberlake being white at all. Because I've seen multiple white people speak out against racial inequality, you know, in perfectly capable ways. John Stewart is one that comes to mind. I've seen others. I can't recall the names right now, but I know John Stewart has, you know, had a monologue or two, you know, speaking out on racial inequality. And, like, Timberlake's mistake, again, it wasn't being white. It was what he said. What he said was a mistake. Like, let me pull this up right now. We're going to read through the entire saga word for word, just so I don't want to get anything incorrect here. So somebody replied to, well, first Justin said, he added Jesse Williams after that great speech Jesse Williams gave the BET Awards. Somebody said, so does this mean you're going to stop appropriating our music and culture and apologize to Janet too? Timberlake said, oh, you sweet soul. As he like stroked his, like the Nazi war patches on his elbow of his jacket. Like, the more you realize we're the same, the more we can have a conversation. Bye. So, like, one, you know, the sassiness, the oh, you sweet soul, that's sassy as hell. And unnecessarily, really. The second thing is, the more you realize that we're the same, the more we can have a conversation. He's basically all lives mattering you. You know, we're all the same, man. Don't get caught up with color. We're all the same. He can keep that bullshit, too. And then just bye. Again, dismissive and sassy. Very spicy by Timberlake, but very dismissive. And his best option, in hindsight, and I mean, I feel like in foresight as well, his best option was to just ignore that tweet. But then he decided to respond to it. And the way he did it was, again, condescending and dismissive. And that's why he caught the backlash, the jokes, whatever. Because he is clearly someone who has benefited from black music and black culture. And he did leave Janet out to dry in that Super Bowl. You know, so for him to speak up, I say about inequality, about something that pertained to inequality. And when he does choose to speak, he's saying some, you know, condescending and dismissive shit. That's whack. That's whack. So to answer the question, is there any white person, you know, that could speak out on the injustice without coming across as negative and racially biased? Any of them could. Any of them could. But when you're starting out being dismissive and condescending, and even the message you give is basically we're all the same, all lives matter, keep it. So if that's the statement that you want to make, keep it. But if you want to, you know, speak out, and if you don't know what to say, give those people your platform. You know what I'm saying? If Timberlake didn't know what to say, he could have just retweeted Jesse Williams' speech in full. You know what I'm saying? Because maybe a lot of people that would not have seen that would see it. But instead, he got spicy and dismissive, and that's why he's catching the backlash. And I think it's deserved. All right. And the last question for this week is, how do you motivate yourself? I've come to realize that I'm not motivated to do much of anything these days. It's something that I've been dealing with for probably a year now. And I think with the proper motivation, I could be 10 times better than my current self. You struggle with motivating yourself, and what are some of the things you do to stay motivated to better yourself on a day-to-day basis? Man, you're asking the wrong person, honestly. Like, this came in last week for myself and Trill Ballins, and we didn't get to it. That was my fault. But in this might be something better posed for him, because you're asking the wrong person. I have always struggled with motivation, always, like as long as I can remember. And it's not so much me being lazy, which I am somewhat lazy. But it's just, I don't know. I need to see the light at the end of the tunnel before I do anything. And that is a blessing and a curse, mostly a curse, because I struggle horribly with motivation. So I would say one of the things that helps me with motivation is giving myself things to look forward to. And it doesn't really matter what it is. Like, I feel like you have to have something to look forward to. I spoke on that before. You have to have something to look forward to give your self to look forward to. And I remember at an old job that I hated a few years ago, I was working Sunday through Thursday, second shift. It was a fucking horrible schedule, fucking horrible job. Sunday through Thursday, second shift. So Thursday was my Friday. And again, I worked second shift. So every Thursday, again, which was my Friday, I would go to a different restaurant up in the city and eat, you know, some wild meal, like something way, 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 way too extravagant for like Thursday afternoon. And I would get drunk as hell, and I would go into work. It was the only time that I really allowed myself to eat fried food. So I'd really go in because it was my Friday, you know, and having that to look forward to made other things like a little bit easier. It's a little bit easier because I'd have things to do, and I'd give myself little things to do. And Friday, like, that was the measuring stick. Like, if it was Tuesday, and I'm putting something off and putting something off, putting something off, I would just say, okay, it's got to be done by the time I get to Friday, or, you know, one less beer or whatever. You know, I'd limit my drinks or whatever. And me being a functioning alcoholic at the time, I was not going to miss a drink for nothing. So I'd make sure to get my shit done. So on Tuesday, my goal was to get that shit done by Friday. And by the time you get it done, you're one day closer. So I would just say, having those things to look forward to. And it may sound weird. It sounds very corny as I replay it, but it helped. It really helped. So give yourself something to look forward to. That's the best way I can say, you know, best way I can say that helps me with motivation. All right. And with that said, that brings show number 84 to a conclusion. As always, guys, I want to thank you guys for rocking with me these first 84 shows. And I would now like to say this is going to be the last episode of the show. I'm not sure for how long. It might be forever. It might not. You know what I'm saying? I might be back in a month. I might not. I don't know yet, but I did want to let you know that and let you know that I do appreciate all the support you've given me throughout these first 84 shows. There were a number of things that I was trying to get going and they didn't work. They didn't work. I gave it a shot. They didn't work. So now I've got to figure out if I am working too hard at the wrong things or if I'm just not working hard enough. That's really the options here. So I'm going to be chilling for a minute, trying to figure out the answer to that question. But I did want to thank each and every one of you listening to this for the support. These first 84 shows, I could not have did it without you. I feel like we've had some damn good shows, some outstanding guests. And again, I couldn't have did that without you. So I do want to thank you so much for all the support. And as always, stay righteous.